Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is going to be podcast 477. We're going to talk about the results from Tuesday night's primaries and the cavalcade of idiocy that seems to be what American politics is these days. Well, you know, if you've been following elections for as long as I have, then you know that change is a constant. I'm going to talk about that to a certain degree in this podcast. Mostly, I'm just going to rant a little bit in this podcast. But change is a constant in politics, and it will always be that way. And guess what? It's also a constant in business, and it's also a constant in real estate, especially in the North Metro, because now there are more buyers than sellers. For a long time, it was a buyer's market, and now it has changed into a seller's market. So if you're in the market to sell, especially if you're in the market to buy, both sides, you got to have real estate professionals that understand the market on a house-by-house basis. I've talked about that. And prideofhomes.com is that realtor. So if you're a subscriber or listener to the Bob Davis podcasts, then you know already about prideofhomes.com. It's a licensed real estate agent and a real estate investor with expertise to share with you. In fact, a husband and wife real estate team. So take a moment, reach out, and talk with Eric and Aaron Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They're in the North and Northwest Metro, so Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, Champlin, the whole North Metro 94 corridor. If you want real estate expertise, Eric and Aaron Lucero, here's the number, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. And here's the thing about husband and wife teams. They can respond quickly because obviously it's two people, it's a team. So when you combine that with customer service that Luke Team Real Estate is famous for, you're good to go. Buying or selling, you got to have real estate professionals with knowledge of the market, because then you can find a property that fits your needs. Or if you're selling, you can find a buyer that can obtain the right financing and is ready to go to close. We know the North Metro is growing quickly. You got 94 and 610 expanding. You got schools and access to both Minneapolis and St. Paul. So if you're looking to buy or sell property, reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero for real estate expertise. Here's the number, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100, prideofhomes.com. Now, if you're a pilot, you've probably already heard me talking about Alpha Systems, but if I ask pilots, what do you want to do? Do you want to get there or do you want to get there safely? And most of them will say, well, both. And here's the key. If you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. You need to get it into your plane's package. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives, and there are lots of stories about this. It's FAA approved. They started the AOA revolution. So click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, and you'll learn more about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. And thanks, Alpha, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. I'm a little frustrated because, you know, I guess I'm going to start by simply saying that there's lots of different ways to do podcasts. You can just sit down and talk. You can take news stories and talk about what you see in the news. You can write it out and read it. You can use real sound. There's all kinds of different ways to do things. And sometimes the person who's doing the podcast, it really struggles with how they want to do the podcast. At least I do. Some people, they just don't think twice about it. They just do what they do. But in what I do, I try to vary these and do them differently almost every time, even though sometimes I'm saying the same things, because I just think that's a good way to do it, because you never know necessarily. The podcasts don't sound the same, even if you're talking about the same things. And unfortunately, the same themes just keep coming up unless you want to do podcasts about different things. Now, I've been experimenting with, and I actually feel good about taking the track in the back of my mind that I hear and talking about those things, as opposed to the training that I have as a broadcaster, which is to go find the news and talk about what's going on in the news and provide a perspective on what's going on in the news. I find that increasingly frustrating and difficult and negative, and largely because so much of that track is politics. And I think a lot of the people in our country today are weary of politics. They're tired of talking about it. They see it on TV constantly, and it's wearing us all down. Now, I've turned the TV off a long time ago. I don't watch any television news at all. I've talked about it. I don't watch Fox. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch the networks. And when people say, did you see this or did you see that? I just figure, no, I haven't. And no, it doesn't matter, because if it matters, it will become a bigger story. Now, I continue, obviously, to read the news, look at lots of different sources of news or what purports to be news, which is usually just reaction to this thing or that thing. And of course, tonight, because this is the early morning, Wednesday morning after Tuesday night's primaries, there's a lot of speculation and stories about what people said and stories about what people are going to do and stories about what's going to happen and all of this speculation that is what surrounds what goes for political coverage in this country, which is terrible. And I've talked about that and talked about that and talked about that till I'm blue in the face, and people continue to watch it. I just don't understand why. I am much calmer and happier when I just spend an hour and a half or 2 hours just checking the news out and reading everything and saying, okay, do I need to print everything? What's going on? And again, every day I come to the conclusion that there's if I was doing a talk radio show every day, I suppose there are things that I would take up. But now I look back on my talk radio career and I think, while some of that was so much of a disservice because it was a reaction to something somebody wrote, or it was a reaction to something somebody said or some initiative or whatever. And when you do that, you're just part of the maw of voices that don't accomplish anything. So that's my disclaimer with this. But, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to just sit here and talk or if I wanted to follow some prepared notes, and I think I'll probably do a little bit of the both. There was a Trump win in Florida, North Carolina, and I think Missouri, but it could be Cruz, but I'm pretty sure it's Trump in Missouri. Some of the states split delegates, some don't. You'll have to figure that out on your own. We had a John Kasich win in Ohio, which has sort of given the Republicans a mixed result tonight. And a Hillary Clinton sweep with wins in Florida, Ohio, Missouri, and North Carolina, which essentially puts Bernie down at this point. So the race for delegates to the two mainline party conventions has basically tightened up. And here's how the current delegate count looks. And I'm going to do this because you don't usually hear this when they're doing this. You know, it's not part of the speculation because they assume that you already know it. On the Democrat side, it takes 2,383 delegates to win the nomination. Clinton has 1,488. Sanders has 704, and 164 are uncommitted. Of course, this all changes again after March 22nd when we have another spate of primaries. Clinton also has a majority of the Democrat superdelegates who are, again, you hear this term superdelegates and they assume that you know it, unelected delegates who are free to support any candidate they want at the convention. Over on the GOP side, the candidate needs 1,237 delegates to win the nomination. Trump at this point has 619. Ted Cruz has 394. Rubio has, or well, he will continue to have, even though he suspended his campaign last night, has 164. Ohio winner John Kasich has 136. Ben Carson has 8. There are 6 uncommitted. Jeb Bush has 4. Carly Farina, Mike Huckabee, and Rand Paul each have 1 delegate. And the rest of the 2016 Republican candidates have no delegates. So that's where you go. Now, there's a lot of primaries left. I'm not even going to try to give you the list of the next primaries. You just go online and enter in Google list of Republican or list of presidential primaries, and you'll get the whole table, and you can look it up yourself. But tonight, now, there's talk of two things. There's talk of a brokered convention, and then there's talk of a third-party candidacy, and I'm going to debunk some of that. John Kasich already hired some top advisors with experience with brokered conventions and a bunch of Bush and former Reagan people, including Vin Weber, who is one of Washington's elite Republican establishment power brokers and a former Minnesota 6th District congressman. One of the things that I just shake my head at, and actually I have to laugh because it is actually fun to see what are referred to as major talk show icons copying my prediction made weeks ago that you will see the return of Jeb Bush. Go back and look at that podcast, which I did long before I left to cover the primaries in Mobile Podcast Command. It's entitled Jeb's Back, and I talked about how he's not going to go away and might even be the Republican nominee before this is all over. This is Rush's latest storyline. And then there is a story on Politico now that talks about an attempt at a third-party bid by a group of fools, quite honestly, including another so-called blogger and talk show host who simply can't control his own emotions to stay above the fray. That's Eric Erickson, who has done some good things with Red State and has a weekend talk show. Now he's a talk show host and feels the need to jump in and say, Trump is bad, you should do this, we need to make sure that he doesn't get the nomination, and so forth. You see people this weekend, like Russ Douthat at the New York Times, actually say that Republican voters might actually give Trump enough delegates to win the nomination at some point, but the Republican Party will have to make a decision to ignore the voters and do what's best for the country. So, you know, it's amazing to hear people who call themselves conservatives saying that stuff because they've invested themselves so early on in the outcome of this election one way or the other. And he's not the only one. There are many, many others. Many Republicans not only seem confused, they are confused, disheartened, and dismayed at the specter of a Trump, or even worse, for some of them, a Ted Cruz nomination. Ted Cruz and Trump both leading the pack. Ted Cruz and Trump both, quote-unquote, non-establishment candidates, even though Cruz cut his teeth at the Bush Foundation. So I don't know where we get this anti-establishment thing. And even though Donald Trump has been part of the business and political establishment in New York and elsewhere for years. Here's, Marco Rubio's suspension of his campaign in Florida was very interesting. Florida handed Rubio a devastating defeat Tuesday night. He said, America's in the middle of a real political storm, a real tsunami, and we should have seen this coming. Well, yeah, you should have. The politics, and here we get the usual, this is just the usual hackneyed nonsense that these guys talk about. The politics of resentment against other people will not just leave us a fractured party. They're going to leave us a fractured nation. They're going to leave us as a nation where people literally hate each other because they have different political opinions. Now, he's the one that has been going out on the campaign trail talking about how Muslims this and Muslims that. So you have to keep all of this in balance with what the rhetoric on the campaign trail has been. And then he goes on to say, this nation needs a vibrant and growing conservative movement, which isn't defined. And it needs a strong Republican Party, again, not defined, to change the direction now of this country, or many of the things going wrong in America will become permanent, and many of the things that made us a special country will be gone, which is exactly the politics of separation and fracture that he has just railed against in the previous paragraphs. That's how completely out of touch these guys are. And then again, he says that America needs a vibrant conservative movement, one that's built on principles and ideas. And again, he doesn't say which ideas, not on fear, not on anger, not on preying on people's frustrations, even though that's what he's been doing on the campaign trail. And I know because I saw his speech and I saw him on the campaign trail and I was 5 feet from him. So I know what he's been saying on the campaign trail. And then he goes through and talk about how, you know, he's the Lord, you know, and one of the bloggers that printed this said, and, you know, really it didn't get going until the very end there when he talked about how it's not God's plan that he be president in 2016 or maybe ever and blah, 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 blah. And we need to have, I take great comfort in the ancient words which teach us that in their hearts humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Okay. And here's the problem. Rubio and his campaign and the Republican Party as a whole simply doesn't have any ideas and hasn't in a very long time. And that includes all the people that are on the radio and all the people that are doing these blogs and all the people who are caught up in this maw called the primary election sequence, for lack of a better term. And I know because I've been inside that whole thing. Rubio's use of the term conservative is also really irritating to me because if you ask anybody what a conservative is, they won't be able to tell you. Or there'll be three different explanations for what a conservative is. If you ask them what a Republican is, forget it. They can't tell you what a Republican is or what the Republican Party stands for, because the truth is, and has been true for a long time, the Republican Party simply doesn't stand for anything. Basically, all the candidates and the people who support them and the people in Republican circles don't know what they're for anymore, but they just know that they're angry. And it's almost a hackneyed phrase to say that now, but they just don't know. They just know that they're angry, and they don't even really know what they're angry about. They're angry on the so-called left. They're angry on the so-called right, which, by the way, is the left too. Trump is the perfect candidate for these people, and Hillary Clinton, or actually Bernie Sanders, is the perfect candidate for these people. And a melee at the Republican convention will be the perfect end to a perfectly botched primary campaign schedule in which too many debates between too many weak candidates that they thought were really great yielded a reality TV star with virtually no government experience as a presidential candidate. Now, Trump is not yet the nominee, but the alternative now appears to be Ted Cruz, unless you want to have the thugs in the establishment push the voters out and pick someone like Jeb Bush to be the candidate. Ted Cruz also, and we have to put quotes around this, not an establishment candidate, even though he and his wife cut their teeth in the Bush Foundation. Or John Kasich, who is the most uninspiring political speaker on the trail this year and perhaps ever. I know because I've seen most of them in person, and I saw John speak, and the governor of Ohio is simply, his heart is not in it. I watched him speak, and when I telescoped his speech for the podcast, it made him actually sound dynamic. He is the most undynamic person. When he finished speaking, there was tepid applause. People were like, is that it? No, he's a terrible candidate. And in fact, Bernie Sanders, Kasich, Hillary Clinton, and pretty much Trump all have, you know, very similar, you know, policy ideas. So the reality is there is no conservative party, if you want to even use the term conservative. I don't, because I'm not a conservative. I'm a liberal. There is no Republican Party anymore. And so the only real question is, well, you know, whose fault is it? And I'm going to tell you. Well, you should be thankful that global warming is not going to come up in this podcast, because that's probably one of the most divisive issues that there is out there. But I will talk about climate change, and that is the change of seasons. And we're probably going to have another snowstorm in Minnesota, but spring is coming, and then eventually summer, and you're going to want to turn on the AC. And most Minnesotans turn on the AC when it's like 65, because they love it when it's cold. Here's the thing. You got to have your AC systems checked at home or business to make sure that it's running right. And so it has to be at least 70 for Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your AC. So when it gets warm, don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because when it comes to keeping all of these systems running right, water heaters, plumbing, air conditionings, and so forth, especially these days at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Here's the number, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They've been around for four generations in St. Paul. Everybody knows Ryan. Wherever you are in the metro, they've got a plumber near you. So when I talk about Minneapolis and St. Paul, I'm talking about the suburbs too. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. They're great for emergency service. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check out ryanplumbing.com. They got lots of content up there and information about Ryan. If you do a Google search, Ryan's going to come up first, which is awesome. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. First of all, why does someone have to be faulted for this? We need to know what happened to understand what is wrong. And I'm here to tell you, and I'm telling you before all of the other pundits and people involved in this will tell you, because they won't until it's too late. There is no Republican Party. You have people who claim to be at the center of the Republican quote-unquote conservative movement who are talking about a third-party campaign. This group won't support that group. That group won't support this group. It's not the politics of division. It's simply the fracturing of a Republican Party, a political party that ceases to serve anyone anymore. It's just a shadow of its former self, and it has been that way for a long time. It is not the establishment's fault. It is not the Paulites. It is not the Christian evangelists. It's the rank and file Republican voters' fault. Because no, and I know this because I've spent a lot of time talking to Republicans, and I'm telling you, nobody has had any time for complex answers to complicated problems. And this is the thing I've talked about in podcasts, and it's the thing that I've been preaching about, and they don't want to hear it anymore. They don't want to hear me speak because they don't like being told this, because there aren't any easy solutions to a lot of these problems. People want a meme solution to problems that are way too complex for that, whether it's in business, foreign policy, economics, whatever it is. Nobody wanted to do any organizing work. We are on the eve of the nomination and therefore the presidential election, and still Republicans are spinning around trying to figure out what meme to send out on Facebook tomorrow. They won't do any organizing work. You can't teach them to do any organizing work, and most of the people teaching it don't know what they're doing. And the failure isn't because the Republican establishment didn't listen to the Tea Party either. That's the latest thing. Well, if they'd listened to the Tea Party, then we would, you know. It's because the people who go to those meetings and the Republican voters, the so-called opinion leaders, the bloggers, the talk show hosts, all of them, nobody had any new ideas and nobody wanted to do any work. They just wanted to argue with Democrats and Obama supporters. And I will give you as an example the pamphlet that I saw handed out at the Tea Party that said how to argue with a liberal. And it's just, you know, it's like, let me look up what you're talking about and argue with you. It's not an effort to learn. It's not an effort to solve a problem. It's not an effort to listen or hear the other person and what they're actually saying or thinking about. It's an effort to argue, and it's an effort to win an argument. And so it looks like Republicans have the person who can win the argument, and that person is Donald Trump. And everyone's upset because Donald Trump is winning all these nominations. And, you know, please don't confuse Donald Trump with anything even remotely resembling what some people would describe as a conservative. He'll probably be taken away from you by the thugs in the establishment Republican power, because the powers that be in the Republican Party will pull out all the stops, including a third party, in order to prevent his nomination. And by the way, if they're going to have a third party candidacy, they better get busy, because it's going to take an awful lot of work, money, and expense to get somebody on the ballot in 50 states, and more than likely, no one will organize it, and it will be stillborn. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Donald Trump is not anything remotely resembling anything that you might call a conservative. He has promoted single-payer health care. He's promoted building new infrastructure repair. He is a trade protectionist, and he is an economic interventionist, and plans to use the power of the state to further his aims. He is a classic statist. He is an anathema to the constitutionalist Tea Partier who supports him, as well as the religious Republican and the establishment Republican. So he's not a Republican, and he would have been laughed out of any Republican or conservative circles 5 or 6 or 10 years ago. But as I have said on many occasions, Republicans have proven without a doubt that they cannot work together. They have proven they do not know the meat and sinew and bones of the issues. They prove again and again that they don't understand how to organize politically and win elections. They won't listen to people who talk about that. They won't listen to people that tell them they have no political power. They consistently look outside themselves for answers and for personalities to provide answers and strategy. And they just want somebody who can get the message right. I've talked about this and talked about this and talked about this. They consistently talk tough, and then they vote for candidates who are acceptable to the left, especially in Minnesota, like Marco Rubio or Tim Pawlenty or Vin Weber or anybody else that's a moderate politician. Then they get mad when someone does moderate things like go with the president to normalize relations with Cuba, the murderers in the Cuban regime. They're mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. As long as there is someone else who can carry the fight, they're fine. And if not, well, that's okay. And I hesitate to remind everyone, once again, that this is a federal election. So there are 435 congressional seats and one-third of the Senate up for grabs. That has an impact on the budget, Supreme Court, and other federal offices that require Senate advice and consent, as well as defense initiatives of all kinds. And while you're paying attention to who's winning the Republican primaries, who's running for Congress where you live? Who's your congressman? Who's your congressional candidate? If you live in a Democrat district, who's challenging your Democrat congressional representative, not to mention the state legislature and in some states, state senators and governors. What kind of pressure is going to be brought to bear on the next Congress? That's where the hard work of developing a philosophy, building a grassroots organization, and putting it in play makes a difference. By the way, those are three things the Republicans simply do not have right now. And that's why we want Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has all that in place and he can do all that. The only problem with that is he doesn't give a damn what you think or what you want. And when he gets in office, he can work with a Republican or a Democrat administration, and he can have single payer health, or he can have some sort of Obamacare piece of sausage that supposedly repeals and replaces it. Donald Trump, an authoritarian? Not if he becomes president, if such a thing is possible, and a Democrat Senate is elected. Not if he has to work with a recalcitrant Congress, Republican or Democrat. But again, getting conservative principles in place requires that people actually have a conservative philosophy. And unfortunately, Republicans that I talk to want a grab bag of policies that are often contradictory, whether I'm talking to people at a Rubio rally in Iowa or I'm talking to people in Florida or here in Minnesota. They say they're Republicans, but they want all the jobs, quote, we shipped to China, to be shipped back. Well, we didn't ship jobs to China. It's a long and involved story, the death of manufacturing. But if you want to manufacture buckets, I'm sure Donald Trump will be happy to have you manufacturing buckets. They want a war in the Middle East to defeat ISIS without questioning what kinds of lessons that we might have learned in Iraq and Afghanistan about that sort of thing in the last 12 years. They lament the loss of their liberty, but they want Apple to unlock iPhones for the government, giving them and criminals unlimited access to their personal data. They want the budget brought under control, but many of them live off of government largesse in one way or another, whether it's Social Security or Medicare or other direct payments for various reasons from the federal government. I'm reminded of one conservative who was just an adamant that he was a conservative and he went to work for the ethanol industry. That's not a conservative. They believe in liberty, but they want the government to decide when and where they can protest. They hate the government, but they want a constitutional amendment that has the government defining marriage. They're conservatives, but they don't see any problem with the state providing the resources for billionaire sports owners to build stadiums. And yes, I have heard Republicans say to me, I'm a conservative, but I want them to build the Viking stadium. And I know a lot of, quote, Christian conservatives who are constantly complaining about the moral center of the nation, but they don't seem to mind going to the casino every weekend. So there's that. And then Democrats. Well, why don't you criticize the Democrats? Okay. The Democrats want the government to provide cradle-to-grave services to all of us, and they want the top 1% to pay for it. And this, of course, will be accomplished through redistribution of the resources of the top 1%, which is usually people making over $200,000 a year, not the people who have their money safe from taxation through inversions or stock options or other types of tax dodges, which are legal. And of course, taxation occurs at the point of a gun. And of course, Democrats don't want people to be armed. And they don't seem to understand that when you take away the top 1% of the resources, you could only run the government for a short period of time. They've got a math problem when it comes to a $19 trillion deficit and a $16 or $17 trillion economy, what actually it takes to run it. And of course, the other thing is the way that we calculate inequality is the top 1% usually have their resources in stocks and stock options in companies that they work for. They're not liquid assets. So it's not like they get a salary necessarily in the stratosphere that people talk about. Some do, but for the most part, the resources are not in taxable assets. Democrats believe in the impossible dream, a benevolent, all-powerful government. So do Republicans, too. It's just a different benevolent, all-power government, all-powerful government. The only elites will be those handpicked for advancement by elite-educated suzerains and paid handsomely in these government jobs with other people's money. And what is the Democrat vision? Well, think Venezuela. Think secular Iran. Think North Korea, ultimately. I don't mean there's a secular Iran. I mean, think Iran, which is a theocracy in a secular sense where the religion is actually the politic. They are true. They are the true fascist Democrats, the true authoritarians. They just accuse everyone else of being fascists and authoritarians, but they just don't realize that that's what they actually are. And the Democrat voters, they're all for light rail until the train runs through their precious park or backyard. They're all for faceless, nameless council control of their cities and towns until the police start beating on them. They're all for controlled protests until their exalted government does something they don't like. And then suddenly they put on the Guy Fawkes masks and block traffic and make everyone else miserable. The left is riven with special interest groups all asking for handouts, carve-outs, or some kind of special treatment. And I guess it's fair to say that the right is also riven with the same kinds of special interest groups, just different issues and different desires. And you say, well, what's wrong with American politics? I don't think anybody can articulate it. You know, some of what Rubio said when he suspended his campaign is true. Everything has become so politicized that people hate each other once they learn which side of the proverbial fence their neighbors or friends sit on. The problem is sooner or later, everyone will be on opposite sides of some fence in some issue. So everyone hates everyone in politics. But most of the enmity exists because people are ignorant, spoiled. Yes, Republicans are ignorant and spoiled too, not just millennials. And they have the demands and the patience and the depth of reasoning of children. I spent most of this week researching the various ideas of world cults, YouTube videos with hundreds of thousands of views, predictions on the end of the world by 100 different ways, people spending their lifetimes reading, consuming this crap, selling their books and efforts to channel aliens from various star systems. By the way, I learned that the aliens also apparently have political differences. The Pleiadians don't like the Anunnaki. The Greys don't like the reptilian aliens. Everything is being orchestrated from behind the scenes with Hollywood's help. And you can tell because of the Masonic signals sent during the Super Bowl halftime show or because of a dance or a set of lyrics or a video by some star. Even the commercials in the Super Bowl are satanically inspired or the Illuminati or something. And it's 15 different shards with all of the reasons behind it. And actually, it sounds like politics on both sides of the fence in this country. So when you think of things in those terms, Trump versus Clinton in all this mess doesn't seem so bad after all, in light of the third secret of the Fatima. People drench themselves in this nonsense in television dramas. I do that. I drench myself in television dramas, sports, gambling, alcohol, drugs, social media. And I'm not talking about illegal drugs. I'm talking about the legal drugs that the doctor gives you. And I'm not judging. I don't want to judge people. I'm just saying, apparently, we have time for all this. And we have resources for all this. But we don't have time to address what's wrong, because what's wrong is really frightening. What's wrong is what really frightens us. We don't have time to define it. So we're going to get Trump or Cruz or Clinton, and we'll get 435 people in Congress with election certificates for 2 years, senators with election certificates for 6 years, presidents for election certificates for 4 years, and they will continue to do what they do in Washington. They will give high school and junior high school students tours of the Capitol, filling the parents with joy and admiration and taking selfies. They will raise money behind closed doors from wealthy donors and lobbyists who will write the bills that they introduce. They will rise into leadership. Well, they will carry the water for the powerful in the hopes that someday they might rise to a level where they too will have some degree of responsibility and control over a massive government sector. They will play congressional hockey games and have hot dish contests and pick up their $175,000 and $255,000 or $250,000 checks in 2 week increments with gold plated health care and their per diem and double dip their pensions and head off to the next reception, lunch, and meeting or weekend retreat with the president or the vice president or delegation from Zambia and lament at how difficult and challenging the work is. And inside of all this is a giant structure with tentacles that reach into every single corner of our lives, causing unnameable, enormous stress, malinvestment, economic distress, and confusion in every corner of our society. What's wrong and what is terrifying is we don't need all this government. And we don't know what to do about it. It is enormously inefficient and ineffective and expensive and destructive, especially to our spirit. You know, before all this technology, when people used cash for their land and hard goods only and traded the fruit of their labor for what they needed, we proved that we didn't need the government. And you don't have to be a farmer to be able to do that. You can be a tech person. You can be an IT person and do that. We've proven we don't need the government with the success of unregulated businesses that became empires and then became regulated empires because somebody had an idea and they brought an idea into reality. We just need to remember that we did that and we can do it anytime we want. And maybe this is what Republicans are doing. If I was to be absolutely objective, maybe it's what the Democrats are trying to do. Rejecting the charlatans and the cynics and the controllers and the insiders and the staffers and the political organizers, the thugs with R's and D's in front of their names who will do anything to destroy anyone that challenges their control of this giant tentacle matrix that we call the government. Personally, I can't stand any of them. I'm sure they're mostly nice people, and most of the ones that I've met are very nice. But I don't trust them, and I don't trust the power that they wield, and I think a healthy electorate never should trust them. Not one of them is going to do anything to solve this problem, because once they're in the machine controls them. And we just have to hope that the choice we make is the right choice to head into the storm. Now, that's what's terrifying. And I don't want to say that too fast, because sometimes people miss that. So let me repeat it. And we just have to hope that the choice we make is the right choice to head into the storm. Now, there are people who say that this idea that something is coming is really an Illuminati or Masonic idea or notion. It's satanically inspired to get people ready for a new age that they will dominate, a new age, a new world where technology will allow us to live our lives in leisure, but really it's tyranny. I prefer to think of the electorate of the United States as the Donner Party, which I've done podcasts on, and it's a fascinating story in American history because the Donner Party democratically decided to take the shortcut. The Donner Party, through a choice of their own, labored valiantly to cross the Great Salt Desert. I don't know how they did it, to tell you the truth. They cut their own trail through the Sierra Nevada. And they democratically decided once they were there that they would rest a few days. When they got to the summit, they were like, we can't go on. We have to stop and rest, because they were already half starved anyway. And they woke up the next day and there was 40 inches of snow on the ground. And then they began to really starve. And first they ate the horses, then they ate the dogs, then they ate the leather of their belts and their shoes. And then they resorted to cannibalism to survive. Anybody who knows anything can tell you that in order to have a happy outcome, you have to have a plan. And that's what happened with the Donner Party. They didn't have a fully vetted plan. For example, nobody had ever gone that way. And nobody ever answered the question, has anybody ever gone this way? What do we have in front of us? They didn't want to know. They just wanted to take the shortcut because they were occupied with that idea that they were going to get there before anybody else. What's the Republican plan? What's the Republican path for the future over the Sierra Nevada? What's the Republican path to take the shortcut? What's the Democrat plan for the trip across the Sierra Nevada and the Great Salt Lake? In order to have a plan, you have to have some definition. You have to define the problem. You have to fix the problem in your mind and consider a number of different possible solutions objectively. You have to think about it beforehand. I watch people who are really smart, much smarter than me. And you know what they do? They sit and they think about what they're going to do, and they try out some things, and they might build a model to see what it's going to look like or try it out a little bit before they do it. And they objectively think about their ideas. Is this working? Is it isn't working? Sometimes they throw stuff up against the wall, but most of the time they've thought through it beforehand. Even testing a few ideas, as I said, before they come to a consensus that considers all of those solutions and all the forms of those solutions. So an opposition party or parties in a republic is essential. So when you think about your neighbor that doesn't agree with you, that person is serving a purpose and you are serving a purpose to that person. People opposing each other on issues in a republic is essential. Two or three different directions have to be vetted, and we use the electoral process to vet these ideas. In order for it to work, you have to have ideas. You have to have ideas about solutions. You have to have ideas about directions, points to tack to consider. You have to understand policy. policy, and you have to think about that. We don't have that anymore. We have elites that take care of policy. We have elites that argue policy, and we have thugs and mouth breathers that don't understand policy and don't want to understand policy. They just want what they want. So we have a dominant Democrat Party, which buys constituencies with one way to proceed, in control of the executive branch, and we have a fractured, confused, and ineffective Republican Party with no policy, and in fact, a dumb idea about the future, a dumb Republican Party, which happens to be in control for the time being of the most powerful branch of our government right now, which is Congress. And we have a body politic that is tired, confused, ungrateful, petulant, sometimes violent, ignorant, and uninformed, despite hours and hours of television, social media, talk radio, podcasts, blogs, and so forth. What's the explanation for that? And the answer is, I don't know. And then you have the people. What about the people, Bob? Well, the people are still people. To me, they seem kind and helpful and gentle with each other most of the time. Most of the people I've met in my travels are wonderful, especially when we're not talking about politics. They're great. And sometimes even when we're talking about politics, they're great, which is why I come to the conclusion that the problem isn't the people. It's the mass politicization of everything until everyone is at their wit's end because they can't do anything they want anymore without someone rendering judgment somewhere. Because there's too much authority in a human life that isn't naturally attuned to accepting such authority. We are naturally free. Now, I've gone on awful long in this podcast. I don't like to go on this long, but I'm going to tell you what the plan has to be. We have to take back our human rights. And those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We need to do it outside and in spite of a government that is already oppressing all of us. It has been oppressing all of us for a long time, Republican and Democrat alike. And we have to do it nonviolently. We have to take the power back. So then you say, well, how? Well, now that is what we should be thinking on, reading on, talking about, thinking about, because that's the part that takes work. That's the part that's terrifying. Because if you take your power back, then you take back responsibility for your life. You take back responsibility for the things that happen in your community. You take back responsibility for the things that happen in your political party. You take back responsibility for being able to talk intelligently about issues without screaming and yelling and pounding and telling somebody that they're an idiot, right? Even though I do it all the time. So who cares if Trump is president and Eric Erickson and Russ Douthat are upset about it? Who cares if Hillary Clinton is president? What's the difference? I don't see any difference between the two of them. Ted Cruz? Oh, Ted Cruz, the guy that wants to use the Constitution to define marriage. Ted Cruz, who seems to be willing to take any government solution if it fits his aims. So what's the difference between Republicans and Democrats? Who cares if Republicans or Democrats take your congressional district? Because there doesn't seem to be any difference between them, whether it's the Speaker of the Minnesota House who can't pay his property taxes or his bills, or a governor who just thinks money grows on trees. What's the difference between a $19 trillion and a $17 trillion budget? What's the difference between a Democrat that increases spending for education and a Republican that increases spending for education too, or any other bauble or shiny object that seems to hypnotize the people? Trains, education, housing, stadiums, hot dish contests, and hockey games. What matters is what we as a people will allow. And that conversation is the conversation that needs to start between us now. It won't be the conversation that we have on the Red State Blog or the Glenn Beck Show. It's not going to be on CNN or Fox because they're all tied up in the outcomes and what's going to happen. What's going to happen next week when we have the next spate of primaries? This conversation has to take place inside all of us first. And then slowly it's a process, a generational process, which means it doesn't get solved in a 45-minute show or a season or a debate or an election. It takes study and thought and work generation to generation. Generation to generation. And if we're not up to it, then we should enjoy Hillary Trump or Hillary Trump Cruz and don't worry about it. Thanks once again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 477. Don't forget to get your air conditioning checked. It has to be at least 70 for them to come out and check it, but we'll probably get warm early this year. That's what I think, and they're around for that. But the main thing is also the air conditioning check, but don't forget emergency service. Ryan Plumbing and Heating is great at it. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. If you Google search it, it'll come up first. Metro-wide from St. Paul, that means the suburbs too. Great for emergency service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Springtime also means house hunting time. And if you're house hunting in the North Metro, reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero, the husband and wife team with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They're in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Albertville. A lot of you folks listening up there to the Bob Davis podcast, all along the North Metro 94 corridor. For real estate expertise, Eric and Aram Lucero, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100, or check that banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page where it has Eric and Aram's picture. Click on that, takes you to their website. They can help you out. Good luck with your buying or your selling in the North Metro. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Okay, so that's my deal. Love to hear what you think, and thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, which is a condensation of a lot of the content in these podcasts on GCNLive.com and also Saturdays at 5 on The Patriot, AM 1280. By the way, as we get new radio affiliates for the radio show, I'll announce them here, so you'll be able to find out if you're in other markets like Chattanooga or Chicago or places like that. So I'll let you know what's going on, and I love the new radio show, and it's really fun doing it. Thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting on Instagram, where I am, bdavis7843, also Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. They keep me in Komodo Dragon Coffee and Diesel Fuel when Mobile Podcast Command is out and about. And if you're interested in sponsoring Mobile Podcast Command, give me an email or send me a message on Facebook or Twitter. Love to talk to you about it. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 477. Nothing.